But it's an interesting concept because we were just talking about how when we start getting more into Krishna consciousness, we get more and more of a taste for Krishna. And we also, what that also means is many things become distasteful to us. And the problem is things which become distasteful to us, which we have to do, creates an obvious difficulty for us. So, I'll tell you what it was like in the early days of ISKCON when everyone who was joining was young and very renounced, just renouncing society and dropping out of college. So for us, it was no problem. We came to Krishna consciousness. We said, "This is it." We didn't have any conflict. We just said, "This is it, and that's the end of the story. We're joining the temple." So now there's no conflict because we didn't have another life. Most of us were not married, single men living in a temple. Okay, no problem. What if you have a career? What if you have a family? Or what if you're building a career? Then what often would happen for many people is they would lose interest in their career, they would lose interest in their schooling, they would lose interest in their families, but they weren't in a position where they were able to join a temple, or they weren't, we can just say they weren't in a position either externally or internally. So that often becomes a problem for many devotees because as they gain a taste for Krishna consciousness, and if they're finding it more difficult to maintain their material lives, their careers, their school, and so forth, often what happens is they begin to neglect those things. Sometimes we even find people will neglect their health. They'll get so involved in Krishna consciousness, they'll become so austere, they may minimize their eating and sleeping to a degree that where they become unhealthy. It's not healthy for them. The thing is, there's a positive side to that. When you're on a very renounced level, you can do that. You can give up tremendous amounts of sleep, and somehow you can go and go and go, and it doesn't affect you. And even as with Srila Prabhupada, you could say it didn't affect him, but you could say it did affect him physically, but he wasn't affected by it. You could look at it objectively and say, yes, he's pushing himself so hard it's affecting his health, but he didn't allow it to affect him. So in that case, okay, it's no problem. But for most of us, that's not the situation. So as I was saying earlier, well, I'll tell you a story, but as I was saying earlier, many devotees have had problems in their family life because of their absorption in giving Krishna to others to such a degree that they were neglecting their families. Now you might say, well, isn't Krishna consciousness, doesn't that mean, you neglect material things? And don't we want to become renounced from family? Isn't that the ultimate goal? Well, in the broader scheme of things, yes. But when you're in family life, you're young, you're middle-aged, it's not time to renounce, then it becomes a problem. So let's look at both sides, and I'll tell you a funny story. There was a devotee who wanted to take sannyas. He was probably, let's see, probably 35, 34, something like that. And, no, actually, it's another story. He must have been 25. No, I got my stories mixed up. He was 35. Doesn't matter how old he was. He went to Prabhupada and said, "I want to take sannyas." He was a leading devotee. And in the early days of the movement, the leading devotees were like generals. And Prabhupada often would give them sannyas or encourage them to take sannyas because then they would go out around the world and open centers and inspire other devotees and guide them. And Prabhupada needed men to do that who were free to do that, to travel. If you have a family, it's more difficult. So he came to Prabhupada and said, "Prabhupada, I'd like to take sannyas." And Prabhupada said, "What about your wife?" And he said, "Yeah, it's okay with her." Now, the actual truth is he never asked his wife. And so it got back to her later. So ladies, how would you feel if you found out your husband was taking sannyas and he didn't tell you? You probably wouldn't be too happy unless you didn't like him. If you didn't like him, yeah, great. Get that bum out of the house. We don't want to see him anymore. Just leave me your money. Leave me the car and the kids off on the road. Yeah, but that's normally not what it's like. So she got wind of this. Wow, she upset. She flew in to Vrindavan to see Prabhupada and basically said, what the is going on here? How is it you said my husband could take sannyas? And Prabhupada said, no, I never said that. Because Prabhupada thought that she was okay with it, and he didn't want her husband to take sannyas if she was okay with it. So he's saying, I'm not going to give your husband sannyas if you're not ready. Anyway, she was so upset. At one point she told Prabhupada, she said, I'm so upset, because she was just distraught by this. It was all like set in motion. It was going to happen in a few days. She didn't even know about it. And here she is. She's probably 32. She's going to be widowed, at least in that culture, when your husband takes sannyas. That's it. Ideally, you shouldn't get married, which is why husbands took sannyas when they were 70, not when they were 35. So she had it. She feels just like Roma feels right now. Roma's been studying, and she's had it. She's ready to go back to Godhead. So she told Prabhupada, said, I am fed up. I hate everyone. I hate everything. I'm fed up with everything. And Prabhupada smiled. And he said, oh, very good. You think, Prabhupada wasn't very compassionate. What did he mean? He saw this woman who had become totally detached from everything. It's just the whole world was like, to her, was just pain and poison. She didn't want to go on. Not that she was suicidal, just kind of like, there's nothing here enjoyable for me. Prabhupada said, oh, this is very good. You're making advancement. So from his point of view, he saw it good. So there's extreme examples when this kind of renunciation can have a positive effect. So he succeeded in sannyas, but he ruined the family. Prabhupada allowed it, but Prabhupada was also thinking, okay, if she can do it, if she's renounced, if he can do it, if he's renounced, good, let them happen. It's real renunciation. You can actually do it, and that way you're not failing. Of course, it ended up that he fell down, and ended up she got married again. So it was a failure. So they, not only did they not succeed by failing, they failed and failed on top of failing. So that wasn't good. Anyway, I was telling this other story before. I don't know if we got cut out, but one devotee was so enthusiastic. He was saying, we should help the fallen souls to such an extent that we should be willing to fall into Maya to help them. And my immediate response was, crazy. This is a crazy idea. And then Prabhupada said in one letter, yes, the highest consciousness, the highest service is to think about helping others. But higher than that is to think about helping yourself. Now, a very important point for us in Prabhupada taught this often, is that whatever you do for Krishna, you should do first class. He said, there's a saying in India, if you try to do something first class, it'll come out second class. It'll never come out quite as good as you try. But if you try second class, it'll come out last class. So you always try to do something greater than what you feel you can do. You always try to do the best. In whatever you do for Krishna, you try to do it the best. Now, if you look at Prabhupada's life, he was amazing. He would answer letters from wherever he was, and every letter that was written to him, he answered. He didn't think, well, I'm a guru, I'm teaching, I'm writing, forget the letters. Wherever he went, he had a regulated schedule. He didn't think, well, I'm the guru, I'm traveling, forget the schedule. He would just go right into the schedule, which included the same diet, a walk every morning, massage about 11 o'clock every day, and resting in the afternoon. And he would do that every day because He needed to maintain his health, and that's what he did to do it. He would read his own books every day. I had the opportunity to be with Prabhupada in Los Angeles, and every evening he would sit in his little garden, which was like his little oasis in Los Angeles, and they would read Krishna book to him, and he wouldn't say anything. He would just listen, and he actually looked like a statue. He was in such samadhi listening. And that was part of his regular program. The busiest person in the Hare Krishna movement, the guru of the whole movement, it was amazing. It was amazing how he operated. He never went to extremes in his life to get something done, or rarely did he do that. I attended a meeting. It was a president's meeting. Early in the movement, I was a president, and we were invited after a Rath Yatra festival to meet Prabhupada in his room for a president's meeting. And so I had some conception or assumption what that meeting would be like. Here you're meeting with the guru of the Hare Krishna movement, and there's so many temples and so many disciples, and how is he running this? And so, you know, you get this picture of, you know, like you see these pictures of executives, you know, three or four phones, they're on the phone, you know, faxes are coming in, you know, now it's all email, you know, this computer, that computer. You go in Prabhupada's room, there's no phone, there's no nothing. And he was just speaking to inspire us. That's what he did. He was very, you could see, he was very much in control of himself and his life. In fact, on Prabhupada's desk, when his desk was clean, if you moved anything, he would say, "Why did you move that?" It's like everything had its place. He was never, in other words, in order to accomplish something, a certain part of his life didn't get disrupted. Oh, where's this? I can't find it. I've been so busy today. I can't find my keys or this paper or this. What time is this appointment? You know, like how often we live our lives that way, you know, in order to do something, we neglect something. So this whole conversation began earlier, for those of you who weren't here or if we were cut off, it began by discussing this a conversation I had in India where a devotee was observing that many devotees are very successful in their outreach, in their teaching, in their spreading of Krishna consciousness to the point that they neglect their families. So the point I was making is that Prabhupada's we're not seeing anything now? So, how are we doing? Did we lose anybody? Did we lose you? I'm looking down now to see. Deborah lost. Okay, live feed on Krishna page. Trying to get Greg back into action here. After an 8-month absence, we're all forgetting how to do this. Okay. Nothing now. Please refresh. Refreshing may work. If it doesn't work, I'm going to pick up my computer and go into another room in my house. So let me know. I am not knowing now what is happening, but okay, we can. So, so I was presenting the idea that, okay, Gora, my god brother Gora, all glories to Gora from Canada. So Greg just needs to like refresh. So, I'm forgetting what I was saying. So, you know, the Prabhupada, he said a devotee's expert in everything. And, oh yeah, here's a nice story. So, Brahmananda Prabhu, who was one of the first devotees in ISKCON, he came to San Diego to a restaurant that we had there. And when he was leaving, we had a case full of drinks, soft drinks or juices. So one of the devotees said, "Well, would you like this drink or that drink?" And he said, "I'll take both." And he said, because once he asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada could give him an instruction to do something, and then Prabhupada asked him to do something else. And so then he said, "Well, do you want me to do either the first thing you asked or the second thing?" And Prabhupada said, "No, do both." So the idea is that Prabhupada expected that whatever we did, we would maintain, and then we would do another thing, and we wouldn't neglect the first thing we started to accomplish the second, which would include, it could include things we discussed like health, like family life. It could include regular study we were doing, or any kind of regular activity we were doing. You know how sometimes we're doing something steadily, and then we want to increase our activity, and then we give up something, or we neglect something. So now I want to tell you a wonderful story of neglect. And you won't even believe it's true, but this will give you insight into what it was like to be in the Hare Krishna movement in 1974, where the average age of the average devotee age was probably 24 or 25. And the average amount of time, the average time a devotee was in the movement was probably at that point, 3 or 4 years, maybe less. So there was one devotee, he was a very, very good devotee. He was so regulated in his schedule that you didn't need a watch. You just, when he got up, you knew what time it was. When he finished the 16 rounds, you knew what time it was. When he burped, you knew what time it was. He was like, he was amazing. And he was getting up every day at 2 o'clock. And he had a wife and daughter, but he was living in the temple, and they were living in an apartment outside, and he was living with the men. And he was becoming very, very, you could say, serious, determined, empowered from his sadhana. And he got so inspired, he wrote Prabhupada a letter. At this time, his son was 1 year old. He wrote Prabhupada a letter, and he said, "Prabhupada, I would like to take sannyas." Wife must have been 23, 24, 25 at the most. His son was 1 year old. And he wrote Prabhupada a letter. "Can I take sannyas?" So here is like an ideal example of succeeding by failing. Total failure in the marriage in order to take sannyas and succeed. Now you might think, this devotee was crazy. Think again. Many devotees thought that way in those days. Because their thinking was, household life, here's a situation which is causing a problem. And the solution to the problem is to give up the situation, because I'm failing at it anyway. And it's just getting in the way. And my daughter's out there trying to distract me. You want to come in? Speak to the crowd? I always try to get her, but she's humble and shy sometimes. So it's a typical example that I could succeed and fail in another area of life, but not even consider that to be a failure if I succeed in my preaching, in my missionary work. I can have a total failed marriage. Fine. Prabhupada didn't go for that. And actually, Prabhupada wrote a letter to this devotee. It's an amazing letter, incredible letter. And in the letter he said, "You should never think that any condition, your Krishna consciousness is dependent on any condition, being married, not being married, working, not working, any of these things. And you can be Krishna conscious anywhere." And then Prabhupada said, he said, "What kind of example are we setting for society if all our men leave their wives and all these women are left abandoned with their children? What example does that set?" And so often Prabhupada used the term ideal house order, become an ideal house order. And part of what he meant by being an ideal house order is to be an example. Here, I'm a Krishna conscious person. I have a family. I have children. And not only is it not an impediment, but the family is becoming Krishna conscious. We're happy together. It's successful. So, okay, now you can take that into any area of your life in which you may feel personally you're not up to par or you may be failing, and think, it's not what Prabhupada wants, it's not what Krishna consciousness is about, to be successful in one thing at the cost of failing in anything else. That's not what Prabhupada wanted. In fact, at one time Prabhupada said, if we think that way, we'll become the laughingstock. Because then you can develop a mentality, well, it's okay to compromise my integrity as long as I can succeed. Because a lot of times, at least temporarily, you can succeed very well by compromising your integrity. There was a coach, he wrote a book, and it was called What Got You There Won't Keep You There. And it was all about how people rise to the top in the corporate world. And what is required to rise to the top? The consciousness that they had, the competitive spirit they had that got them there, is going to totally destroy them when they get to the top. Because those qualities won't help them, because those qualities are really not sattvic. They're not the kind of qualities that are relational. They're not the kind of qualities that are balanced. So oftentimes we will compromise our own integrity, our own principles, to so-called achieve success. Well, what kind of success is that? If, the mafia, they're supporting the Catholic Church, well, what's that about? Is that what we want? So, Srila Prabhupada had to deal with this. Now, it's continuing to happen today. And why is it happening today? Well, one of the reasons is that it's natural that all of us want to spread Krishna consciousness, and we're always being pushed by Prabhupada's words to be compassionate, to give it to others, to go out and save the greater family. But Prabhupada expected us to be balanced enough that we would be successful in our own families, that we wouldn't neglect our own families for the greater family. Now you might say, well, look at Prabhupada, he left his family. Yes, but he left it when he was older. He had raised it, he had done everything he could, and he had come to a point where he could not fulfill the order of his spiritual master because his family was not, they were not cooperating. He wanted them to help, but he couldn't. So he tried everything he could. And he knew at that point, if he didn't leave his family, he wasn't going to spread Krishna consciousness. So no one was going to say Prabhupada was not dutiful to his family. But even if you say he wasn't, even if you say, well, his family life failed, it was worth it, because look what he did. So if we are on that level, okay, then there's a concession. On that level, yes, people on that level, they can do those things. But for us, no. It doesn't work that way. So, as I said, Prabhupada had written that saving yourself is a higher principle than saving others, because you can't save yourself unless you save others. And because we teach by who we are. And if we are not grounded, if we are not balanced, then we're going to attract people that aren't balanced. And we're going to cause them to become more imbalanced. So this happened a lot. It's probably still happening, but it happened a lot in the early days of our movement. Many people were not balanced, which was attractive for other people who weren't balanced. And it was a mess. It was a mess. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written about this extensively, and what he's written about is how, you don't just look at the spiritual side. You say, well, if I just have the spiritual down, everything is going to work. He said, no, you have to look at the material, because the material is a foundation upon which you build the spiritual. And if that material is not firm, it's going to be disturbing for your spiritual. You can't build your spiritual on a foundation that's not strong. So many people tried to do this, and they were doing well for a while, but they neglected themselves physically, emotionally, in terms of relationships, marriage-wise, work-wise. They neglected, they didn't build themselves on a firm foundation, and at some point they broke. Even though they had strong spiritual sadhana, they broke. And they had to go back and fix the foundation, the material foundation, whether it was health, whether it was ashram, whether it was occupation, whether it was just self-honesty and admitting where they stand materially and spiritually. A lot of times what we found is that people felt that position equated spiritual advancement. So they would try to get a position. But that didn't work because they just wanted the position for prestige, or they wanted it to make themselves feel good that they have a position. And that was a sign of being imbalanced, not being grounded. And just being grounded means be satisfied with your dharma, with what you do. Don't be envious of another person's karma. Other people are maybe more qualified than you. Be satisfied with what Krishna gives you and build your life on that foundation. Now, I want to go back to this point of, okay, what do you do when you're getting into Krishna consciousness and you're finding certain things which are necessary in your life, which are important, to become distasteful? And you're finding them difficult to do. It's actually a really good position to be in. And I say that because, you know, if you look at the Bhagavad Gita, I mean, we don't always look at it this way, but if you look at the Bhagavad Gita, there's so much there about going beyond duality. And it, like, sometimes it goes like, okay, so Greg, what happened? Throw away your iPad. That's the solution. So, where I was going. Who could tell me the last thing I said? What was the point I was making? See, this is what happens when you get old. You get all fired up, and you forget what you're fired up about. Then you get fired out. What was I saying? Who can remember? Bhagavad Gita. Yes, right. It's interesting, the Bhagavad Gita. Roma, yes, she's a good student. And she's awake, and it's, oh my God, it's 1:40 in the morning her time. Let's give her a big hand for staying awake. Hari Bol. There's so much about duality in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Like, it's like Roma was just writing me. She's saying she's doing all this studying, especially math. And many of us know that higher math, whatever we're doing, algebra, geometry, trigonometry, we're looking at this and going, I'm not an engineer. I'm not going to use this. All I'm going to do is go to the grocery store. And I'm just going to swipe my credit card. That's about it. That's about, you know, how far my math is going to go in my life. Why do I need to learn all this? And makes us just kind of, it can get depressing, discouraging, and confusing, and so forth. So you have Arjuna in a very similar situation. He's saying, you know, well, what's the point of fighting? I mean, there's no use. These people are going to die on my account. So, you know, we all face this kind of dilemma. We come into a situation and go, I just don't like this. This doesn't seem good for me. I don't want to do it. It'd be repulsive. Or you could come into the opposite situation where you're just going head over heels because you like it and you're losing your mind because you like it so much. So either way, you kind of lose your mind. And here Krishna comes along and says, doesn't matter if you succeed in this. Doesn't matter if you fail. Doesn't matter if this makes you happy. It doesn't matter if you're distressed. What matters is you do it. Interesting ideas. And especially for the Western mind. Because the Western mind doesn't think like that. The Western mind thinks, nah, if I don't like it, I'm not going to do it. And Krishna's saying, no, there's an interesting point where Krishna's saying, he's not telling Arjuna to do it because you like it. He's telling him to do it because it's your nature. So of course, you will tend to like what your nature is. But it's not just about liking, because he's saying, well, be transcendental to like and dislike happiness and distress, and do it because you're a kshatriya, that's your nature. So find your dharma, your service, and you do that. So just like you take Roma's position, or you take someone who's married and is having a difficult time, you take someone who's working in a job that, due to circumstances, they're presently, it's important they do that, they're stuck in that. Of course, we could say that they've got themselves stuck in it. That's another talk. Let's just for now accept they're like Arjuna and that's their service. And so then when you come to this position where you find yourself, you have to do something and you really don't want to, you don't like it, then you're exactly in Arjuna's position. And now all those instructions in the Gita are like perfectly fit for you. Say, okay, so like if you take this person who's out there preaching, and he's having great success, and his family's falling apart, and he goes home and he looks at his family and says, this is getting in the way of my preaching. But actually, he's like Arjuna, and he should hear Krishna saying, no, this is your duty, do this. Make it as successful as your preaching, make your family as successful. Make everything you do successful. At least make the effort. Don't be attached, but make the effort. So Roma, you make the effort. That's it. Beyond duality. Whatever it is. Pallavi. I give Pallavi so many things she's never done before. She says, I don't know how to do this. It doesn't matter. You like it, you don't like it? No, you do it. That's duty. That's it's a very dharmic concept, and it's very alien to the Western psyche. And it's very important because it enables us to balance our life in a way that we won't be so repulsed by things which don't fit in what we would consider likable, tasteful, as often happens in relationships, as often happens in work, as often happens in school, or often happens in life in general. There's so many. I, for example, in my life, I feel very fortunate that I've had to do some things that were very difficult for me to do because they went against my nature, or they're very distasteful for me. And these are times which I can say I learned a lot and I gained tremendous amounts of strength. And as I was talking with Greg the other day and about physical challenges and whether it's a physical challenge or an external or some external challenge or an internal challenge, emotional or within our mind, if we're in the right consciousness, we can see opportunity. We can see this is good. I don't like this, or I'm challenged. This is good because I have to push myself a little more. And it's really good when we push ourselves because it builds up a certain internal consciousness or internal determination so that when there are difficulties or obstacles, we naturally react. Our natural reflex is to push forward through it, to go beyond the duality of, I don't like this. I mean, you can see that in your life when you confront something you don't like. How difficult it can be. You're telling yourself, I don't like this, I don't want to do this. Yuck. It could be anything, going to the dentist, going to whatever. But you'll see, if you persevere through it, you can come to this consciousness that Arjuna had, where Arjuna said, okay, Krishna, I'm ready to do it. And when he said to Krishna, I'm ready to do it, it was easy for him. Before, he couldn't do it. It was like so difficult. I can't do this, Krishna, it's not possible. And he gave all these reasons. But at the end of the Gita, he said, okay, yeah, I can do this. And it was easy. So a lot of these things which we think are difficult for us is because we're caught in, I like it, I don't like it. Whereas if we go beyond that, which is a more balanced position, really, to the dharmic position, no, this is what Krishna has given me. This is the situation I'm in. So let me do this. Let me perfect this. Whatever it is, school, family. Because the thing is, if you give up in one area of your life, then what's to say you're not going to give up in another area? It's just like Roma. It's just like, oh, I don't want this school thing. Is I give up, I quit. Or Greg is saying, oh, it's but my physical, I have challenges, and it's just so hard. But the point is, if you go through it in the proper consciousness, if you do it out of duty, then when you confront obstacles in other areas of your life, you have that consciousness. That's the way you work. That's the way you operate. That's the way you think. Whereas if you give up in one area, then there's going to be the tendency to give up in another area that's difficult. So if you look at the Gita that way, it's really interesting. Because you see all this. Transcend duality and do your dharma. I don't like the way my wife does this. I don't like the way my husband does this. I don't like when my sister does this. I don't like my father does this. I don't like when my teacher does this. I don't like this. I don't like that. It's like the disease. I mean, if you really think about what is the material disease, like what really is it? It's all me. Like, I'm not happy. Or I'm not comfortable. Or I. That's it. That's the disease. That's where we're caught. And it gets worse. I need to be honored. I'm not being honored, therefore I'm not happy. You know, it's very interesting living in India, because Indians have a totally different mind than Americans. It's like they're on another plane of existence. Things which would drive Americans crazy don't even bother Indians at all. I was in, for example, I was in Faridabad in May. The temperature was 111 degrees. People were standing outside and nobody was complaining. In Florida, when it gets 84 degrees because it's humid, everybody complains. Indians are different. They're not so me. I mean, of course, this new culture, you know, the modern importation of Western culture, yeah, they'll become more like that. But they're interesting. It's interesting how they think. They're more dharmic. But my point is, and I mean, we all think about ourselves, my point is that our conditioned consciousness, we're so conditioned to think about me, what do I want, what will make me happy, what I don't want, what I don't like. Think how much we complain. What's this complaining about? It's all, I don't like this, I don't like that, this wasn't good enough. You know, I went to this store and I had to wait 35 seconds longer than I should have. I'm never going back again. I mean, this is our conditioning. It's insanity. And me. So, spiritual life, it's more, like Prabhupada would say, more of this, like, idea. There's a higher mission here. There's a mission. It comes from above, from Krishna down through Mahaprabhu, through the Acharyas, and then we get it. It's like, okay, we inherited a mission. So Prabhupada said, he was once asked, he said, well, how do you become compassionate? And Prabhupada said, well, serve the mission of compassion. In other words, there's a mission, maybe you're not so compassionate, but there's a mission to be compassionate. It's a mission of compassion. So you serve the mission, you become part of that mission. And so the mission becomes bigger than you. And so your personal concerns become less of your concern, and the mission becomes your concern. That's the proper attitude. So the more we get out of this, I'm not happy, I don't like it, I don't want to do it consciousness, which is all centered around, what is it centered around? I'm not happy, I don't like it. Me, what makes me happy? And more, what does Krishna want? Becomes so much easier. Then you're in a situation which normally you'd look at it and say, yuck, I don't want to do this. Now you've transcended. You're not looking at it, does this make me happy? Does this make me distressed? You're totally not in that consciousness. You're in a different world. You're in the world of, okay, this is what Krishna wants. Let's do it as best we can. And then you're not overcome by this lethargy from the discouragement that comes from not wanting to do something, or the depression that comes from it if you really don't want to do it. And then you're more in the dharmic, yes, this is my duty, let me do it well. And so you're more looking about being dharmic in everything you do, being successful, maintaining your life successfully in all areas because that's the best thing, not because you want to or don't want to. So this is how you get beyond succeeding by failing in some aspect of your life. And I don't think we should ever call a success we have at the cost of failing in some other area of our life. I don't think we should tell ourselves, yes, that's success, because we'd be cheating ourselves. Okay, it is success. Give yourself a pat on the back. You succeeded in this way, but don't succeed at the cost of someone else. Before we end, I'll go back to this letter. Prabhupada made this amazing point to this devotee. So he's got a wife who's in her 20s, mid or early 20s, got a one-year-old son, and he's writing to Prabhupada to take sannyas. Prabhupada says, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, my devotee never puts anyone into difficulty. He said, consider the difficulty you will cause your wife and son if you leave them. Are you not considering this? So it completely just bypassed his mind because he was only thinking of the success he could get in the service he was doing. And a failed marriage in his mind was nothing, no problem. Just let it crumble. This is the success. I will get the success in the world. Now what this is what we call the personal the private victories. What do you call it? The private victories and the, what's the word? Who knows? Your external your victories in the world and your personal victories and, you know, your private victories create your, what's the word? Tell me, somebody. What is it? Personal victories and private victories and non-private victories. That's a word I'm looking for. So we should be thinking in terms of, if I can get the private victories, then all my other victories will come naturally. And we as devotees, we're all teachers ultimately. That's what we're doing. We're either teaching by our life or we're teaching our children. We contact people. And so we want to teach by having Krishna consciousness in all aspects of our life. Every aspect of our life is healthy. Every aspect of our life is successful. And that's the best teaching of Krishna consciousness, because that's what everybody wants. World. Private victories, worldly victories. Maybe that's the word. Maybe there's another. It's actually a Stephen Covey principle. Private, he has private and, I don't know. Anyway, you get the idea. I mean, his idea was the private victories are fundamental to the other victories in the world. So, now, we started late, so we're going late, and if you have any comments or questions, I'm going to stop talking. I don't know. I think I've said what I wanted to say, but I just request you, when you're reading Bhagavad Gita and you see all these verses where Krishna's talking about going beyond duality, connect it with the concept of Dharma, as Dharma being a duty that you do, and you do it steadily and enthusiastically because you're not connecting it to what you like and what you don't like. Of course, there's a whole other topic about connecting with your inner music. Whereas you're doing what you like because it's who you are, which is actually different than doing what you like because you do who you are to help other people. And it's what you can contribute to the world, it's the best way you can serve the world, and it's what inspires you. So that's another point which I didn't want to make tonight because it would confuse you, but I wanted to make this point. Greg finally made it. Now we have to go another hour. Okay, so I'm going to read what Gora said. To support your point, Jim Rohn, one personal growth speaker, makes the point that the goal isn't to become a millionaire. The goal is is the wonderful character you can develop while you're working through all kinds of obstacles and striving to achieve your goals. Yeah. That's why I was saying that if you have a difficult situation sometimes, that you look on that as great fortune, because it's going to bring out qualities in you that are important for you. And maybe there are qualities in you that need to come out that hadn't come out in the past, and you failed in life, in many situations in life, because you didn't have those qualities. And now you see the current situation as an opportunity to develop certain strengths that you need to be more successful in what you're doing. Yeah. It's my experience, my realization, that it's interesting, you know, like when Krishna tests us, sometimes he's not testing us. It's just we're messing up and bad things are coming to us. And if we're stupid, we think, oh, Krishna's testing us. And if we're smart, we realize, I made a mistake and I'm getting a reaction for this. And devotees often don't realize this, because devotees tend to look at how Krishna is helping and teaching them, which is true. But oftentimes, it's caused by our own foolishness. It's not that Krishna just chose us out of a zillion people and said, okay, now it's time for your test, step. You're in the front of the line here. More often than not, it's just we did something wrong, which created a problem. And now we're facing that problem. Of course, okay, that problem is a test, but it's self-created. My personal experience is that it's smarter to not to it's like I was telling, I was doing a home program in Faridabad, which is just outside of Delhi. And it was all people who didn't know much about Krishna consciousness, but of course they're Indians, so it's part of their culture. They're familiar, they're close to that knowledge. And I said, one of the things I've noticed in India is that people always ask for blessings. Not so much in America, but in India. India, you always say, please bless me, Prabhupada, please bless me. So I was telling them, I said, it's really interesting that you pray for blessings to solve problems that you created by not following God's instructions. You're praying for blessings to God to solve the problems that you created by not following his instructions. And it's true. And it's common. So, that's an interesting thought. Okay, Ajinkya says, okay, let's go back. Gaur says, a difficult situation could be a blessing in disguise. Yes. It's all Krishna's mercy to help us improve and make us stronger. What I was saying also in my own life, what I find is that if you become proactive in your Krishna consciousness, then you'll find Krishna needs to test you less and less, because you're doing the right thing. It's when we're not doing the right thing, then Krishna's going to test us, because he'll bring us to a point where you're either going to have to turn right or left. Whereas if you proactively take the right road, he won't have to do that. But if he sees you veering off, he's going to put you in a situation where he's going to make things perhaps a little difficult for you, so you'll be forced to turn, hopefully to turn towards him. So if we're intelligent, then we'll follow Krishna's instructions rather than wait for him to slap us into following them. So Jankya says, if possible, could you tell us a story when a devotee wanted to do or not do something, but still she did it or avoided it because he or she gained a lot of spiritual education from it. Let me see if I understand your question. Wanted to do or not do something, but still he did it or avoided it because he gained a lot of spiritual education from it. Well, the thing is, wanting to do something or not wanting to do can have a spiritual element to it, or a transcendental element. You want to do it because it's the right thing, because your guru said, because Krishna wants you to do it, because you understand you're getting inspiration from Krishna. It's not motivated by me. Or vice versa, you avoid something. So naturally, if you do that, you're going to get inspiration. And you're going to get realization. If you do something which is very self-motivated, maybe not the right service for you, then there'll be some lack of real deep satisfaction, because on some level you'll feel that this wasn't right. It's not that I shouldn't have done it. So I don't know if that's what you're asking, but usually the thing is, sometimes we resist the truth, and when we resist the truth, we don't feel when we do the wrong thing, it's difficult to admit it, and we don't feel it. But if you're more open and less resistant, then when you do something which is wrong, you feel it, and that feeling corrects you. Like, guilt is self-correcting. But sometimes we won't even allow ourselves to feel the guilt of not doing what's right or doing something wrong, because we don't want to acknowledge it. So if you disobey your guru, or you disobey Krishna's instructions, or you just do something sinful or just wrong, or you mistreat somebody, if you're open, if you're honest, you'll feel this is not right. In Krishna consciousness, everything feels right. Everything is experienced right. Even the wrong feels right, because the wrong, even the so-called bad, it pushes you to Krishna. So anything that pushes you to Krishna will make you feel good. Even if you feel bad, you'll feel good, if that makes sense. I hope it does. Makes sense to me. You can feel good while you're feeling bad. And material life is feeling bad while you're feeling good. Isn't it? Like, you know, you meet these people, they're wealthy, you know, they have everything, and they tell you, I don't know what to do now because I've got it all and I don't feel good. So they're feeling bad about feeling good, and we're feeling good about feeling bad. Okay. I don't know about a story when a devotee wanted to do something. I know a story when I was told one devotee wanted to do Ganga Parikrama, walk around the whole Ganga, but his spiritual master didn't want him to do it. He did it anyway. And it was a sannyasi. When he came back, his spiritual master told him to give up his sannyas because he disobeyed him. So sometimes you can do something which is spiritual, but it's not proper because it's against the desires of your guru or other senior Vaishnavas. So, you know, there are other considerations other than this is just on an absolute level right or an absolute level wrong. Sometimes you have to do the wrong thing because it's going to produce the right result, and your spiritual master authorizes it. Sometimes the opposite is true. You could do the right thing and get a so-called spiritual result, but he tells you not to. It's like we have so many principles, you know. We should do this and do this, do this at this time. What if your spiritual master said, this morning I don't want you to chant your rounds, I want you to finish this project. I want you to clean this room, it's dirty. Chant your rounds later. So the principle is to chant early. But in this situation, if you chanted early, then you'd be disobeying your spiritual master. One time, Prabhupada's servant wanted to go on book distribution, and his duty was to be with Prabhupada 24 hours a day. And Prabhupada said, yes, you can go, but without my blessings. So book distribution was very dear to Prabhupada. And here is a devotee who wants to do it, and then Prabhupada's saying, you can do it, but without my blessings. In other words, if you do it, you're disobeying me. Even though the service itself is spiritual, but in this context, it's not. Maybe that answers your question. Now, it's very easy to just say something is maya, this is Gaura, and walk away from it, only to be confronted with it again. Prabhupada said, if I'm having difficulty getting along with someone, we should think it is due to my lack of Krishna consciousness, that I cannot get along with a person. The problem is not with the other person, yes. And, of course, our ego wants to think it's the other person. Everyone's in Maya but me. Everyone's wrong but me. Yes, I think one of the things that's it's important for us to realize, and this will help us, this will prevent us from becoming discouraged when we see impurities within us, that we are conditioned souls, and conditioned souls operate in a certain way. So think of it like software. As conditioned souls, we have a certain operating program. So when we see these things, like the tendency to feel that we're right, the tendency to fault find, tendency to think we're better, the jealousy, the envy, or whatever it is that we find in ourselves, which is not Krishna conscious, don't be so alarmed. That is the program. And if you and I don't advance spiritually, that program will prevail. It's just the way it is. If you don't do anything, if you don't have some sadhana, some consciousness, Krishna consciousness, some bhakti, some spiritual activity in your life, then that other consciousness has to prevail. According to the depth of our spiritual life, we will purify those bad qualities and we will transcend them. So when we see them, it's just part of the program, material conditioning program that we inherited with this body and we've inherited for lifetimes. And we're trying to purify ourselves from it. So don't be so surprised when you see all these things coming and this idea that, oh, I'm better and everyone's at fault. That's just natural way of thinking for a conditioned soul. Of course, we're trying to not be natural, trying to be supernatural. So we don't want to think that way. And we get upset when we see ourselves thinking that way, but that's just the programming. That's the software. We have to upgrade the software. Consciousness upgrade. I get the new consciousness upgrade program. You may be running on 1.0, and now it, you know, as you advance in Krishna consciousness, then you go to 2.0, 3.0, and then you'll get to version 108, and you're liberated. Haribol. And your consciousness is Krishna conscious. That's all it is. Naturally, just Krishna consciousness. Just compassion, love, kindness, devotion. That's no fault finding, no envy, no jealousy. None of this other stuff. Boom. Okay. Now, Roma says, the problems are usually external manifestations of our internal problems. The problems really lie within ourselves. Yeah. Whenever you see an external problem, it's always, it had to start internally. Although our tendency is to, like in the case of this devotee, he was thinking, well, it's his wife and family. And the problem was he couldn't deal with it. And Prabhupada told him that in the letter. Very, very clearly. Gorda says, sometimes a problem can be so overwhelming that it seems the only thing one can do is say, Krishna, you please deal with this. I can't figure out how to deal with it. It's beyond me. Is this a faulty mentality to bother Krishna like this, or is this a sign of dependence on him? Is this being irresponsible? I think it's both. Because, you know, sometimes we're irresponsible and we actually could deal with it and we just go, Krishna, you take care of it. But if you don't deal with it, I can't do it. Now, in some cases, that's true. It might be so intense that you can't. Like if you're an alcoholic and you're just, you know, you're addicted or you're a sexaholic or something. You just, you have to do that. But in other cases, I think it would be a cop-out. And I think if you're honest, you know which one is a cop-out and which one isn't. But generally, it's going to be a combination of both. That a devotee takes responsibility, but he also prays to Krishna, not feeling fully qualified. But I think as spiritual people tend to err on the side of over-dependence on Krishna. And it might sound weird to say, well, how can you be overly dependent on Krishna? But you can. You can be overly dependent to the point of becoming weak, to the point of being irresponsible, to the point of not doing it. I would say you do it, but you ask Krishna, you beg and you pray, Krishna, give me the intelligence how to do this. Give me the strength. But you're doing it. You know, you're making the effort. You're taking full responsibility for the problem. In the consciousness that you realize it's a group effort. It's, you know, or it's a partnership with Krishna. I can't do it on my own, but I'm working on it. I think that's a better attitude. And that's really what, you know, Krishna's in the Gita is doing. He's not telling Arjuna, you don't have to do anything. He's saying, you do it, but You'll just be the instrument. I'll do it through you. So if we can become the instruments and Krishna can use us, that's fine. But we have to be usable and we have to be willing to be used. And going back to my other point, I think it's important for us to realize that many, many of the problems that we think are external, circumstantial, or tests of Krishna are actually self-created. And we just don't recognize it. We don't admit it. And a lot of those problems we could have avoided because we created them. Of course, sometimes Krishna may create a situation which was beyond our control. But I think we can be objective about what's beyond our control and what isn't. We should try to be anyway. Okay, Ajinkya says, I mean, some devotees detested doing something, but still she did it because it was spiritually enlivening. Well, one of the things that I think Gaura will... attest to this also, is that we did so many things to please Prabhupada that we kind of lost connection with what we liked and didn't like. That like came afterwards, like after we did it, we might look back and say, ooh, I didn't really like doing that. But it was so blissful because I was doing it for Krishna, I was doing it for Prabhupada. So that happens, you know, when you're on a certain level. You may be shy and then you have to do something which requires that you be very bold. And you do it. And you're able to overcome your shyness. And you feel very blissful that you're able to do it. A lot of devotees experience that. And a lot of the devotees experience that beyond what you like and don't like is the relationship you have with your spiritual master or with Prabhupada. That Prabhupada wants you to do this. And so you're... The happiness and pleasure you're getting is not because you like it. It's because you're satisfying your spiritual master. Now, it doesn't mean devotees shouldn't gravitate towards services which inspire them. I'm not saying that. But oftentimes, even within services that inspire you, you have to do things that are not enjoyable, that you don't like to do, or you may be afraid to do. But because bhakti is based on love and affection, the love and affection is the motivation, not that you like it or don't like it. And when the love and the affection is motivation, you can be extremely blissful about doing something you don't like. Right, Gaura? I mean, we did so many things that, you know, we wouldn't have liked to do if we had a choice, but Prabhupada wanted us to do it, and we did it. We were very blissful. Even sometimes more blissful, happier than doing the things that we like to do. Interesting, isn't it? So Pallavi says, so that if one does something wrong, especially after initiation, the effect goes to one's guru. Yeah, Prabhupada said that. If someone is initiated and then they commit a sinful action, then the guru has to accept the karma. So that's why a lot of devotees don't want to become gurus. They'd rather not accept anybody's karma if they could avoid it. So, but they do it as a service. And then, of course, the devotee should rectify himself. Prabhupada said, be kind upon your poor spiritual master. Okay. Something devotees detested doing? Well, I think a lot of devotees didn't like distributing books. They were shy. You know, some of the places we distributed books, people were nasty. Were actually nasty. And a lot of devotees, very, very difficult. Some people, it's very difficult to give classes, give lectures. Some devotees didn't like to manage, very difficult to manage. But again, because it was service for Prabhupada, they were experiencing their relationship with Prabhupada. They were getting their juice from that service, from the relationship, not from the service itself. Many examples. So Deborah Subi says, we call her Subi, because she said, Deborah means bee, or Sue means bee? Okay. Willingness to overcome oneself will is augmented by our deep affection for Guru, faith, trust, and the process. Exactly. Willingness to get out of the way, to acknowledge we don't know what we don't know. Exactly. attitude, ability to shift, relinquishing, staying present in the now, embracing what is, acceptance. Yes, so what I found is, when you say ego-like perception. This point, such an important point, accepting. You know, I'm going to tell you a story. It's such a good story. Pay attention. Roma, are you still awake? This is a good story. You like it. I was in India. I haven't told you this. I saw a god brother in India. I hadn't seen him for years. And he was actually arrested and put in some, I don't know what it was, some weird Indian thing. And they got him arrested. 32 months in prison in India. If you could imagine a prison in India. So he said when he, his first day in there, it was just, he couldn't deal with it. I just couldn't deal with it. And something happened on the second day, and he made a shift in his consciousness to accept it. My daughter needs to come in. You can come in. I'm in my daughter's room because it's quiet here. She needs to come in and get her night clothes because it's night here. So somehow he said, on the second day he was in jail, he realized, well, I'm going to be here. And he said it reminded him of the Brahmachari ashram because they slept on the floor and all they got was one blanket. And that's how we lived as Brahmacharis in the early days. And so many things reminded him of the Brahmachari ashram that something clicked. And he kind of saw it in another way and he accepted it. And he said as soon as he accepted it, all the misery went away, all the distress. And he became happy in jail. Isn't that amazing? The power of acceptance, because when we resist, we suffer by resisting. And if something's happening, accept it. Especially, it's powerful if you know you're doing something and you know Krishna wants you to do that. You know this is what Krishna wants you to do, or you know your guru wants you to do it. It's so much easier to do. Like sometimes, devotees didn't know if they should do this or that. And they would get very mental, and they would say, if I just knew that Prabhupada wanted me to do it, I'd be happy. And so sometimes it's all they needed was to know. This was pleasing to Prabhupada, that was it. And it wouldn't matter what it was, just that he was satisfied. So that's an example. Thank you, God helps those that help themselves. Yes. Krishna's, Prabhupada used to, Prabhupada used to say that God helps those who help themselves, and he used to give out cookies to the children after class. I don't know if he asked for it, but they would give him this big tray of cookies and he would give it out to the kids. Then later on it became a thing where he'd give it to everybody. And so how would you get a cookie when Prabhupada was giving it out? Well, you'd have to go up and get it, and there were 20, 30 hands in front of Prabhupada. So you'd want to try to get your hand. Let me see my hand here. Put my hand right in your face. Right there. Give me that cookie. God helps those who help themselves. Okay, Prabhupada's giving out the mercy, but you have to get your hand up there so you can get it. Up there. Up there. 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 Sorry, put my hand in your face. Like that. Gaur says, I remember the Kumbh Mela in 89, Lokanath Swami asked me to go to the mic and speak to 5,000 people from the mandap and how I came to Krishna consciousness. I was frightened. And Lokanath Swami said, don't worry, I will translate for you. I was very nervous, but as I spoke, I saw many people's faces started to light up when I started quoting shlokas. They started to become very enlivened. Soon I didn't want to stop preaching and loved it. But it was time for kirtan. Yeah, many, many times it's like that. You know, what you're afraid of doing, you can't stop doing later on. I think in Krishna's service, it's really a wonderful opportunity to be challenged to do something that's difficult or something you're afraid of doing, something you think you can't do. And then you do it for Krishna. It doesn't matter if you can do it. That's not the point. It's just that what matters is you make the effort. That's what Krishna sees. Not like Krishna needs your success. Success is nice. He'll give it if he wants to give it. But he wants to see our effort. So, Gauridas. One time a devotee wanted to go out on book distribution, but he was needed back at the temple. Chudananda Swami told him, don't be a servant of your service, but become a servant of the one you are serving. Nice. I like that. It's a relationship. You know, we have, you know, in the early days of the movement, devotees would say, well, Prabhupada, how do we know you're pleased? And he'd say, well, if your temple president's pleased, I'm pleased. So probably Prabhupada really made it clear that pleasing another devotee, particularly a devotee who is an authority, who is in charge, who is a leader, is pleasing to him, because we're all cooperating, and he therefore is pleased. So we're very much involved in relationships in Krishna consciousness, not just service in a vacuum. No, it's a service to a person, to Guru, to Krishna, to another Vaishnava who's asking us to do the service. So, okay, Rama, yes. How could I sleep with your wonderful class? Yeah, I knew you would say that. But believe me, it's possible for some people to fall asleep in class. We've all done it. Braja, they want to say Hare Krishna to you. Can you come here?
1 second. Just need to get something. 1 second, I'm coming.
Okay. You can all hear her. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. See, what's happening is the Women of Bhakti Tour is leaving tomorrow morning at 7 a.m., so my wife and daughter are packing, and we're totally not ready. It was a crazy day. So, she's a bit in a rush right now. But maybe she'll come back and bless you all with her darshan. We'll see. Deborah Subi says, you said that often we don't want to acknowledge, that is, feel what is true deep within us until we go deep within, every action remains superficial, but without depth, like how you teach chanting, go deep, feel, make contact. We have been so conditioned not to feel, not to express our truth. That's the way in, through the gatekeeper, subconscious. Yeah, I think sometimes we're afraid. I think we're afraid to feel because we'll feel something we're not supposed to feel. We'll see something we're not supposed to see. And we'll feel bad that it's there. Or maybe it'll deflate our ego. We thought we were better, and now we see something worse, and it's just hard to admit. But that admission is the beginning of the cure. Because you can't cure something that you don't admit needs curing. So, and we can call that self-honesty. And call that introspection. But, you know, you're well aware of how the ego can block us from seeing that, because we all have a certain perception of ourselves, of who we are. And if something about us doesn't fit with that perception, it's very easy for us to kind of bury that or turn that something that's not right into something that is right perceptually. Not that it is right, but we just see it that way. So it fits within our perception of who we are. I mean, you know, sometimes you'll find people who believe that they're honest. Raj is going to say hello. You have to sit here to say hello. Come here, Bhaja. Ah, there she is. Okay. This is Bhaja Sundari, straight from Mayapur. Can you see the Mayapur vibrations? Everyone wanted to see you, Bhaja. You want to say hello?
Hello. Hi, Bob.
Say something in Bengali.
What?
You want to say something in Bengali?
No.
Okay. Bhaja's going on the Women of Bhakti Tour. She's our mridanga player. Hare Krishna. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Hare Bol. So let's say we have a fault within ourselves. But our ego is telling us that we don't have that fault. So we can even, in our own perception, we make that fault become something good so it fits within the conception we have. And you see this with some people. People who believe they're honest could be lying and not knowing they're lying. And even believing the lying is honesty. It's just weird. So it requires a, you know, depth of self-honesty and simultaneously a willingness to embrace our faults. And one of the ways we can do that is understanding that we need to do that to overcome them. And that's how we overcome them. So it doesn't serve us at all to ignore them and not admit it. It might serve our ego, but what's the point? Okay, where do we leave off? So, Gaura says, Prabhupada said, by this endeavor alone to distribute my books, you'll go back to Godhead. He didn't say only if you're the biggest book distributor. Yeah, by the effort. Yeah, that's wonderful. And Raja, they say you look like me. Yes, that happens. She's going to be doing the lectures and the kirtans in a few years, and then I'll retire. You can ask her all your questions. Hare Krishna. So Sue is saying, a wonderful practice is to say yes, to say yes, no matter how we feel, yeah. That's good. So there's, you know, it's not that we deny our feelings or we completely become like stones, but there is this nature, this part of Krishna consciousness where sometimes becoming attached to the person we're serving is all we need to overcome any hesitancy. Correct? Did we lose the chat? Right, okay. So, does anybody have anything else they'd like to say? It's 9:40. Then we should probably end class here. Right? Shouldn't we? I mean, it's getting late. So I'm going to write that. Because I don't know if we lost everybody. They seem to have disappeared. Oh, there we are. How do we know the difference between when Krishna is arranging things for our spiritual advancement or our material desires are just being reciprocated with? Pallavi says, no, they don't want to end. Nobody wants to end. Okay, I have to answer Gaura's question because he asked. How do we know the difference between when Krishna is arranging things for our spiritual advancement or our material desires are just being reciprocated with him? I think, at least in my experience, if we're dedicated to advancing, if that's what we're all about and that's what's most important and that's what predominates in our life, then if Krishna fulfills our material desires, it's just to help us. And the other aspect was, then I don't think you have to make a distinction between Krishna arranging for our spiritual advancement or Krishna fulfilling our material desires. I think it's all the same thing. But he'll just do what will help us. And sometimes we need certain desires fulfilled. If they're not fulfilled, we'll go nuts. We'll go crazy and we can't execute our Krishna consciousness. So Krishna arranges to fulfill those things so that once they're there, it's like if you ever get really, really hungry and you just come to a point where you can't function, you just have to eat something. And once you eat something, then you're fine. It didn't even matter what you ate. So there's certain material things we need, and once we have them, then we can function properly. So if Krishna gives us those things because we need them and we get them and it doesn't deter us, then we know, okay, it's all one. It's all good. Right? Yes, it was nice having the gang together. All the wonderful devotees. So, next week, you won't believe this, but next week I'm going to be at Pallavi's house because I am flying to Israel, and she lives an hour from Newark, New Jersey, where I'm flying to Israel from. I'm flying Tuesday night, which means we have to leave no later than 8 o'clock I believe, maybe even a quarter to eight. So I think we should start the class about 6:45, and we'll let you know. Actually, we could do a class Monday night also, because we're going to do another program at her house on Monday night, so we can record that also if you want to see it. Then we'll just go on and we'll let you know. So, you see now, Paula Verona is envious of you, so I have to go to England. And Greg is saying, well, why don't you come to Columbus? And then Gore is saying, well, why don't you come to Ontario? And then Deborah, she's just down the street, so she doesn't have to worry. But anyway, by Krishna's arrangement, we'll go somewhere. So, 7:15, yeah. Well, on next Monday we can do, I don't know, we'll let you know. No, it'd be 6:45 on next Tuesday, 6:45. You have to get it really early at Jinkya, but you can do it. You'll have to miss Mangalartik and attend the class. Okay, well, we'll keep you posted. Thank you all for coming. And we are now getting ready for the Women of Bhakti tour. And we'll see you in Philadelphia and New York City and everywhere else. Hare Krishna.